if you will, to Acts chapter 18. We will take our reading through the first part of verse 18. After these things, Paul departed from Athens and went to Corinth. And he found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to depart from Rome. And he came to them. So because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked. For by occupation, they were tent makers. And he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and persuaded both Jews and Greeks. When Silas and Timothy had come from Macedonia, Paul was compelled by the Spirit and testified to the Jews that Jesus is the Christ. But when they opposed him and blasphemed, he shook his garments and said to them, "Your blood be upon your own heads. I am clean. From now on I will go to the Gentiles." And he departed from there and entered the house of a certain man named Justus, one who worshipped God, whose house was next door to the synagogue. Then Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, believed on the Lord with all his household, and many of the Corinthians, hearing, believed and were baptized. Now the Lord spoke to Paul in the night by a vision, "Do not be afraid, but speak, and do not keep silent, for I am with you, and no one will attack you to hurt you, for I have many people in this city." And he continued there a year and 6 months, teaching the word of God among them. When Gallio was proconsul of Achaia, the Jews with one accord rose up against Paul and brought him to the judgment seat, saying, "This fellow persuades men to worship God contrary to the law." And when Paul was about to open his mouth, Gallio said to the Jews, "If it were a matter of wrongdoing or wicked crimes, O Jews, there would be reason why I should bear with you. But if this is a question of words and names and your own law, look to it yourselves, for I do not want to be judge of such matters." And he drove them from the judgment seat. Then all the Greeks took Sosthenes, the ruler of the synagogue, and beat him before the judgment seat. But Gallio took no notice of these things. So Paul remained a good while. The grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of the Lord remains forever. How are you? Are you beat down with your Christian walk? Are you beat down with this whole church thing? Are you tired and worn out and sometimes wonder if this even matters? If the Lord is going to bless your prayers, if the Lord is going to bless your labors, if you've done all that you do for the Lord in vain, how are you? You see, the matters of discouragement, the matters of being sore pressed or let down in many ways is what you have here in the case of Paul. You remember in Philippi, he had been beaten severely, and then he goes to Thessalonica and he goes to Berea, and in all these places he sees some fruit, and yet he's still bound to be tired and worn down. His preaching ministry in Athens, well, it didn't necessarily yield all the fruit that he had hoped. He had a chance with the philosophers, and some believed, and some ostracized him, and he left. And now he comes to Corinth. And you know from his letter to the Corinthians, he didn't come brazenly. He didn't come riding in a wave of gospel glory. No, his own words testify otherwise. I was with you in weakness, in fear, and in much trembling. Paul's worn out. Paul is tired. Paul didn't necessarily know what to do except to put one foot in front of the other and make opportunity when he saw opportunity. But he knew the gospel had to go forward. And so as we look at this text, what we're going to see is that in the case of his servants, no matter who they are, no matter where they find themselves, the Lord sends comfort to his people in order that they might comfort others. The Lord sends comfort to his people in order that they might comfort others. We're going to consider that under 3 points. And as we do, well, what we want to do is consider how the Lord has comforted us. You might consider how the Lord has comforted you and how you might comfort others in their Christian walk and in ministry. We're going to take it up in 3 points. We're going to see, firstly, gospel labor. It's the same thing we've been seeing. Then we're going to see the gospel reality. You've been seeing this too. And then lastly, we'll deal with that comfort. Right? We'll deal with the comfort that the Lord gives. So what's this labor about which Paul is about and about which the church ought to be about? Well, it's carrying the gospel. Paul arrives in Corinth somewhere around AD 50. We know this because he runs into Aquila and Aquila's wife Priscilla. They've been ousted by Claudius. And for those of you who were here for the Church History Sunday School in the days in which we discussed this, they were ousted with all the other Jews because at this point, Christianity still considered a sect of Judaism. And the Jews had raised up in riots in various places, and Claudius said, enough. Well, now Paul has come to Corinth on his second missionary journey. And Corinth is not your ideal place for desiring to go into ministry after already being tired. But here he is. Here he is in Corinth. It's a tough place with almost 250,000 people into a small place. He's about 50 miles from where he was in Athens. And Corinth, if you know anything about it, was one of the most influential cities in Achaia and in southern Greece. That's Achaia. It was famous for the worship of Aphrodite and for having temple prostitution engaged in lascivious activities. And as a matter of fact, Corinth was so scandalous and so well known that if you really wanted to insult someone, you would call him a Corinthian. Or to Corinthianize would be an expression that meant to live in immorality. And here comes Paul, beat down and tired, worn out from his labors. So as he comes to Corinth, you know his desire. His desire is that everywhere in every place he might deliver the gospel. He might come with the message of Christ and that he might give himself over to that. But the reality is you can't live on desire alone, can you? And so he finds Aquila and Priscilla and they team up. They're tent makers there. And Paul joins them in their tent making. And they're a Christian couple who share his trade. And so he falls into the work and supports his labor. And he works in order that he might preach. Going to the synagogue now, not daily, but only on the Sabbath days. He's working the other six, and on the Sabbath, he goes to the synagogues. And he, or the other five, he's we've noticed. Anyway, he goes into the synagogues to preach Christ. And so what do we see here? Well, we understand that the apostle's giving up his rights. That the gospel labors ought to come with a certain understanding that the service to Christ ought to be our highest allegiance. That the apostle Paul here, as he comes already exhausted, is willing to spend and to be spent so long as Christ is advanced. You understand it. You remember what he says when he writes to the Corinthians. You know how I came in among you. I had every right to bring a wife. I had every right to demand of you, as the church is established, that you support me. And yet I didn't do that. And the reality is, this is a man who's been gripped by the understanding that Christ said, if any man would be my disciple, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Now what do we do with this? Do we pat Paul on the back and say, great job, Paul. You've done a fantastic thing here. We know you're tired. That's great that you came in and you labored hard in order to still go forward with the gospel. Well, no, the reality is we ought to pull back for a moment and examine ourselves. The reality is that most of us are willing to follow Christ so long as we're comfortable. We're really willing to follow Christ so long as we have the same car and clothes and opportunities for our children and abilities to eat out and not lack or do without as those around us are. We're comfortable in following Jesus in that way, and yet Christ calls us not to live with such a worldly mindset. He does what he does in order to see the church established, the gospel go forward. His heart is in the gospel. Now you say, well, now listen, you're a pastor. That's easy for you to say. You're not Paul. We're paying you, buddy, right? That's, you can say that to me. How does this press into you, though? Well, the question is, why do you work other than to pay your bills? Do you work in order that you may have, so that, well, you really can keep up with the world? Or do you work in order that you may provide, and what you have you might be generous with in order that Christ might be exalted in your home? By having people in and declaring the gospel and sharing in fellowship and reaching out and helping those in need. You see, it presses on more than just pastors, more than just elders. It comes to even your home, that the gospel might be advanced. I mean, we generally give of our time up to a point of mild inconvenience. I saw an article this week. I thought it was fantastically titled. I didn't read the article, but the title was good. It said, "Church ought to be our excuse, well, in order to get out of everything else." And I'm going to just make it up, whatever the article was. I'm going to assume that it was saying that we ought to be those who are consumed with the idea of the gospel, that we ought to give of ourselves in such a way that the thoughts of the gospel consume us, take us up, even in our everyday affairs. Paul is motivated by the gospel. What are we motivated by? What is it that drives us? What is it that causes us to look at the world and go into it? He had every right to take a wife, and he had every right to ask of them for pay. And yet he doesn't. And he doesn't do it out of a sense of guilt, but of love to Christ. And so then the question comes, are we doing what we do in order to glorify Christ out of love to him, or simply out of that pinch of guilt that we don't like feeling in our consciences? All right, I'll go help out here, because I don't want others to think badly of me. Or I'll go do this because I just can't stand the thought of someone not going. We go out of a true sense of love to Christ. Listen to Calvin. Doctrine is not an affair of the tongue, but of the life. It is not apprehended by the intellect and memory merely, like other branches of learning. But it is received only when it possesses the whole soul and finds its seat and habitation in the inmost recesses of our hearts. So here's the question. Has the truth of who Christ is seated itself deeply in your heart so that your whole life has been affected, so that even in your going to your employments, Christ has preeminence in your thought? So that even when you are in your homes, being who you really are, Christ has preeminence in your thought. And so then the labor of the gospel is to go forward with Christ preeminently before our eyes and to carry it there, carry him there. And then what's the reality? Right, he goes, they earn, and he goes and he preaches and he teaches in the synagogue in verse 6. And then you get Timothy and Silas, in verse 4. And then Silas and Timothy come from Macedonia. And you know from Corinthians that they came with funds for Paul. And he's able now to give himself more fully, right? He is stirred up, compelled by the Spirit, and he begins to testify even more. And what happens? Well, you get the same old reaction, don't you? There are some who believe, and there are some who cause trouble. Some who don't want to see the gospel go forward. And what does Paul do at this point? He says, "Your blood be upon your own heads." And that's every bit as much a part of the gospel reality as the triumph of the word going forward. So what do we do with this, even? This reality that there will be some who believe and some who don't. Well, there are a couple of things. One, you make sure that you can say this. Right? You never want to be found with those opportunities and you've missed them, as so that when they come back to you, like that watchman in Ezekiel, they can say to you, "Why didn't you tell us? Why didn't you warn us? Why didn't you let us know?" And so you share Jesus with people. But there also comes a point when you've shared him that you understand that it's in the Lord's hands, not in yours. The Apostle Paul didn't take it upon himself to rest in his reasoning capabilities, in the way that he could nuance the text. He didn't say, "Listen, just listen a little while longer to me and you'll be convinced." No. He declared the gospel to them. He saw that they were hardening against it, and he said, "The Lord will be the one who works if he's going to work." And he went on about it. It's not up to you. That's the reality of the gospel. Duty is ours. Consequences are the Lord's. And so we go, we share, we understand that the Lord will bless in some cases and the Lord will harden in some cases. And so we have a necessity to tell people the truth of their situation. And after you have spoken the truth to people in love, you are free. You trust God and live free. free because they have heard and taken the judgment upon themselves. You don't have to beat them into submission. The Lord will do His work by His Spirit. That's the reality. And so what happens? The Lord comes. He gives this promise to him. He says, I have many people here. And the Lord blesses, and the gospel goes forward, and you get justice, and you get the household of Crispus, and many others who believe and are saved. And that's gospel labor and gospel reality. The gospel must go forward out of love to Jesus, and it must be seen in us in such a way that, well, that people understand that you are coming to them with a sincere affection for Christ, not out of a sense of guilt. But it also must go forward resting in the power of Christ by His Spirit that He will work. And then you come to the needs. Going forward in this way is laborious. Going forward in this way requires much. Going forward in such a way can lead to discouragement because it can be years before you ever see the fruit of your praying, of your sowing, of your reaping, of your work, of your labors. And so what do we do? Well, the reality is that when we are discouraged, we often don't look at the blessings of the Lord as we ought. As we read this, you may or may not have noted all the ways that God Himself blessed and comforted Paul. Right? Verse 9, of course, is primary among them. It's the chief way. He comes to Paul and he says, don't be afraid. Paul told us he was afraid. We read that. 1 Corinthians 2:3. I came to you with fear, with weakness, with trembling. And the Lord comes Himself and shores him up. Here's the reality for you when you're discouraged. Many of you have been through things in church. You're going through them right now where you are plagued by discouragement. Maybe in your families, you've long pleaded with God that He might bless, that you might see loved ones come to Him. You've long shared the gospel with those who you know ought to know it by now. Well, trust Christ. Here's the encouragement for you. He comes to you with this promise. He's able. Leave it in His hands. Paul, if he rested in his ability, would have turned and left Corinth immediately. But the Lord comes to him and He says, don't fear. I have many people here. It doesn't depend on you, Paul. They are My people. I will see to it that your labor is not in vain. Now, you don't know who they are, but the Lord says to you, do not fear. I have My people. I will see to it that your prayers, that your labors, that your cryings out are not in vain. And so through all of this, the Lord comforts Paul. And He does so in other ways. How has He done so? Well, it starts at the very beginning. He comes to Corinth. And he found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla. You see, these are believers who also had suffered. They had been in Rome, and Claudius had been persecuting the believers there, and along with the Jews, seeing them kicked out. Imagine having to leave your home. That's suffering. Well, Priscilla and Aquila, having been lumped in, they too had suffered hardship. And the reality then is the way that you look at this is that you ought to look in such a way that your experience has been given to you that you might edify others. That you might come alongside someone that you know is discouraged and you might encourage them and edify the brethren. How did they do this? They were just doing their work in righteousness before the Lord, laboring. And they encouraged Paul as he came to them. Right? They were, well, being themselves. And so he stays and helps them. They hire him on. And the reality is you have not in order to hoard, but in order to further the kingdom of Christ. One man said it this way, Think of how profoundly the Lord used their simple, basic, righteous living. They worked at their trade. They took in a needy stranger and they hired a worker in their business, and the Lord gave gospel fruit. And Paul's comforted, and so might your brothers be in your simple, basic labors. And then he comforts him by sending Silas and Timothy to him. They catch back up with Paul here in the work of the ministry. And so then you see this co-ministry throughout the New Testament. And so they come and they share the burden with Paul. And in their coming, they refresh him. So he's compelled to go forward. It stirred him up in his ministry. Here is the way that you too can be a blessing. You come alongside those that you know have a care, have a cause and concern in the gospel going forward. And you stir them up. And then the Macedonian churches. You may not have put this together, but Paul does when he writes to the Corinthians. He says, I robbed other churches in order that I might be of no burden to you. Those churches gave sacrificially. Right? They removed some of the burden of tent making that he might be freed to serve. And so Paul was encouraged by their faith and their love. That's what you see him write in 1 Thessalonians. In chapter 3. And so here's the question, or the thing for us that we take as this stirs up Paul, we might consider how powerfully the Lord uses or might use our faith and love and our expressions of it in continuing the work of the gospel. And then Justus, he is converted and he offers up his home. It's right next to the synagogue. He offers it up for the convenience of allowing gospel meetings there. And it's a simple act of service that the Lord blesses. Do not underestimate simple acts, how they might encourage your brothers and sisters, how they might further the advancement of the gospel. Here's Justus. He says, look, my home's here. Come. Come and teach. Come that others may hear and learn. Don't discount any act of service that you render to the Lord. It's not unnoticed. It is not unfruitful. The Lord may bless and stir someone up and give them grace to go forward yet another day. And then you see the blessings come, don't you? You see Crispus. You see Crispus. And many in Corinth, the Lord blesses. They hear and they believe. And you know that Paul baptizes the household of Crispus. And the Lord gives fruit. And then interestingly, another blessing that stirred them up is the neglect, if you will, of Gallia to intermeddle. They want him to step in and to put an end to the gospel preaching. They want him to put an end to all that's been occurring. And he says, I don't have time for that. And the gospel is able to go forward. So here's the question for you. How are you stirring others up? How is it that you are looking around and seeing needs that you might edify others in their love for Christ in order that they might continue and press on in love for Jesus and gospel labors? How are you looking around at your brothers and sisters around you and seeing their need that you might stir them up without repayment. That you might stir them up and encourage them that maybe within their own souls you are the catalyst to the spark that gets set back ablaze. And they are encouraged and go forward. Are you beat down? Are you tired? Are you worn out in this Christian living thing? Well, the answer is not to pull away, but to seek how you might encourage others, that the Lord might stir up and give fruit that you may would not have seen otherwise. And to look around and give thanks for all of the ways in which the Lord encourages you. Maybe you haven't noticed them today. Maybe you haven't thought about all the things that the Lord has blessed and given to you in order to encourage you. Well, now, as that old children's song says, it's a good song. Count your blessings. Name them one by one. Count your many blessings. See what God has done. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Lord, bless us. Give us the reality of thanks that ought to fill us.